I'm very happy to announce Marcin Ratajczyk. He works with art, with bodies, with photography, and with generative AI. Well, from chronophotography to generative AI, the subjects of Edward Muybridge's photographies come a long way. Edward Muybridge's, you might have seen a picture, these very old photos of a horse running, like this photo series. I think you will know what I mean. He will tell you more about the Solid Flesh Collectives that brings them to life again, and they fuse fitness, culture, the so-called high art, and AI and technology together in this new project. So, give it a big round of applause for the next talk, Hacking Victorian Bodies from Grid to Vector Space. Have fun.
Thank you. I'm going to start with trigger warnings. You don't want to skip them. Flashing images, contorted AI bodies, nudity, but very old one, 19th century, and solid flesh. So I'd like to talk to you a bit about my artistic research into the theme of AI-mediated body representation. And I'm going to start a long time ago with Muybridge. It's a data set that I was obsessed with for quite some time because it's so weird. These images have a striking aesthetic quality, and the story of how they got to be made is very interesting because they were made in between 1884 and 85. And they were first of its kind, a comprehensive study of the ways human body is moving from through space and time. And it's very surprising that the author managed to create these images because of the strict moral codes of the times he was embedded in. To create this work of art, he had to frame it as an explicitly scientific endeavor. And he was claiming that all the images are created just for the purposes of furthering medical research. So he managed to quantize the body in these ways, which are interesting. There's a very intense gender divide in this data set. Women were represented mainly doing domestic chores and some imaginative scenes as this one. Drinking tea in the nude. Men were more doing physical exercises and physical labor. This is our Muybridge himself. He liked to pose for his series also. He was an eccentric guy. More on the gender divide. So I wanted to work with this data set when I started to think about using AI to animate images, because he was the first one to solidify movement and to capture the still frames of the human body, and I wanted to reverse that process to make it fluid and a bit mysterious again. But the first problem was that all these images were treated as pornography in the terms of the closed source commercial software I was trying to use. All of them were flagging the the inputs as strictly pornographic. So I had to switch tools, and I learned about Comfy UI, which is an interface to work with generative AI. And with the Solid Flesh Collective, we created this first work. Thank you. So this would be a technical diagram, I mean, sort of the work. You can see the input images in the top left. We staged it digitally in Unreal Engine because half of the success of any video piece depends on the venue and the size of the screen, so it was a very nice way of faking it. And the entire collective is what I would call a collective as a figure of speech. I had this intuition for quite some time that a collective is a kind of like a magical world, word in the art world. And I wanted to work for some time with sort of an alter ego artistically. And I thought it would be interesting to do it in the form of a collective, which would present itself as this reclusive group, which decided to live in a bunker, which is a gym, but also an art studio, and they're working purely on motion AI. And as any good collective would do, we investigated our own roots. We prompted Solid Flesh into Stable Diffusion. And these contorted images is what came out on the other side. So then we made an apology video, as we should. We see the same staged images and some sculptures based on the Muybridge stills. This made us think of what Susan Sontag once said about photography, how it's a very violent act to take a picture of somebody because it's like pulling the trigger. The language is the same as the military language. But of course, this is in a way legacy discourse. In this space, we care a lot about privacy, and I really enjoy how there are no photos taken of the audience. Like, we're not, like, we, the audience of the CC, are not made into a spectacle for social media. But in everyday life, I think nobody cares for, like, most of the time. But to think about these specific qualities of the prompted bodies, which we prompt into a short existence, I started to call them vector bodies. I think vector bodies always exist in a vector space of possibilities between different characteristics and different possibilities. I have some notes on that, like my assumptions. I think vector bodies often tend either towards body horror or regressive beauty standards. With open source models, we more often get the sixth finger or like an additional limb, which is interesting but often repulsive for the audiences. Which is interesting because historically it was also the case for Edward Muybridge's photographic studies. His photos were also considered repulsive for the contemporary audiences because people just found the bodies frozen in time super unnatural and they were against that. So you could ask whether we will get used to the image of the human body, which is more morphed and more hybridic. But I don't think that will happen because the commercial models that are more widely available tend towards some kind of exaggerated perfection. A second thing that the vector body carries with it is a kind of Victorian moral norm. It is strikingly similar, the discourse that happened in the 19th century and the terms and conditions and user guidelines which, for example, Adobe puts out. Another interesting feature is a potential for extreme inclusivity. By this, I mean it's the first time when we can create representations which are as diverse as we can imagine them, and as the training data allows us to. Of course, this could be used for malicious purposes, but there is, for me, an interesting potential in having a universal approach in generating images. Another feature that the vector body carries with it is that the aesthetics change so fast that usually, I think it's the first time when we can't keep up with the new tools, because before we manage to master them, they change. So we need to pick what we care about as artists. And all these thoughts were developed while I was creating this series of work, which I called the Trying To series. Each loop is a little universe where different characters are staged in similar settings, and each character is individually trying to enact some change in their environment, which is usually some kind of a violent action, but they're always failing. And after I created this series of video works, I was wondering whether it's possible to create some cheap artificial discourse around it. So I used a tool called Notebook LM, which you can feed with different sources and chat about it with the AI. But you can also create a podcast. And I created 2 hours, yes, 2 hours of conversations where two fictional hosts mimic the human way of conversing. And I edited it down to 10 minutes. And I have very mixed feelings about this piece, because while I was making it, I was astounded by how stupid the conversations are. But with time, with repeated listening, I started to internalize the thoughts that these hosts are sharing. So it's a very weird journey from my experience. I'm going to play you a part of this work.
All right, so get this. We're going deep today on these AI video loops. They're called Trying To, and they're super weird, but also like really make you think.
Yeah, you could say that. Like, imagine if every time you tried to do like anything, the world just sort of glitched out on you.
Yeah, it's not like robots or anything. It's like these super realistic videos, but the physics are all messed up.
Right.
And it's not just one video. It's like a whole series. They're broken down into these cycles, like trying to snap a branch or trying to tie a knot.
And each of those has all these little loops, like 25 frames of people just like endlessly failing at the task.
Yeah, so the project, it doesn't seem to be about the AI actually creating some kind of finished product or masterpiece or anything like that.
Right.
The art is more about the AI's attempts to create something.
Oh, okay.
It's like we're watching it try and maybe even fail.
Okay, I think I get that.
Yeah.
But why is that considered art? Like, my computer struggles all the time. I don't consider that art. What makes this different?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one way to think about it is that Aparicii talks about how AI is still bound by what he calls the symbolic order.
Okay.
Which is basically like the language and the code that we use to create it. Mm-hmm. So even when it's learning, it's still kind of stuck within the limits of what we've given it.
So it's like if you're trying to learn a new language, but you only have this really bad dictionary that's missing like half the words.
Exactly.
You can try to express yourself, but you're always going to hit these walls.
Yeah. And I think that's where the Trying To project gets really interesting, because is that what it's showing us? Is it showing us the AI hitting those walls?
Right.
Or is it even commenting on how maybe our own thinking is also limited by these systems that we create? Okay, this is too much. I need a break. But we're just getting started. We'll be back to dive into some even weirder stuff after a quick break.
If you're listening and you want to learn more about Trying To, check out the show notes. We'll include links to the artist's website and writings so you can explore further.
So we left off talking about how Rotajak actually had an AI analyze his own work, like a digital art critic.
Yeah, using Google's Notebook LM.
Right, that's the one. An AI that can, like, take notes, generate ideas, even have whole conversations about specific topics.
It's wild what AI can do these days.
Yeah.
So he fed Notebook LM all this info about Trend 2 and let it create a whole podcast episode about it.
Pretty much. I mean, it's like a commentary track on top of the already meta concept of AI making art about AI.
So meta, it hurts. My brain is glitching just thinking about it. But okay, so what did the AI think about the art? Did it get it?
That's the thing. It's kind of hilarious. The AI hosts, they use all this fancy language, you know, theoretical jargon, but it was so clear they were just mimicking intelligent conversation.
Like they were going through the motions, but there was no real depth.
Exactly. They missed the whole emotional core of the work. The anxieties, the sense of struggle.
It makes me think of those times you're stuck in an automated phone system. You know, pressing button after button. And you can just feel the frustration build.
Oh, totally. Like you're talking to a wall, there's no real understanding on the other end. Just a series of pre-programmed responses.
Which is ironic, because that's kind of what the trying to loops are about, right? Being stuck in these systems that don't care about your individual struggle.
Bingo. And that's one of Rotajak's big points. The potential for AI to create this kind of simulated empathy. You know, a surface-level understanding that lacks any genuine depth.
So the AI analyzing his work was like another layer of the trying to concept itself.
I never thought of it that way. But yeah, totally. The AI was trying to understand the art, but it was trapped in its own limitations.
Whoa. It's like AI inception.
Right. And it makes you wonder, how much of our understanding is just mimicry, too? How often do we use fancy language without truly grasping the meaning?
Okay. Now you're just messing with me. That's deep. Like, are we all just robots programmed to sound smart?
Maybe not robots, but I think it's a valid question, you know? We're so quick to judge AI for its shortcomings, but how often do we fall into the same traps?
That's a good point. It's like the AI is holding up a mirror to our own intellectual habits, making us confront the possibility that we might be more machine-like than we care to admit.
Exactly. And for Rotajak, as an artist, that realization was both unsettling and inspiring. He's talked about how listening to the AI analyze his work made him question his own creative process.
You know, it feels like we've been unpacking all these layers of meaning. And I'm curious what Bruno Schultz might add to this. His writing often has this element of the absurd. You know, these attempts to impose order on a world that just refuses to cooperate.
Schultz's work definitely taps into that struggle between control and chaos, which I think we see very much present in trying to. Think about that story where his father is trying to create this new generation of beings in the image and semblance of a mannequin. It's comical, but also unsettling, this desire to remake the world. Here's a fragment of the book brilliantly read by our colleague.
Our creation shall not be the heroes of romances in many volumes. Their roles shall be brief, concise, their characters having no further plans. Often, we shall take it upon ourselves to summon them to life for but a moment, in the service of a single gesture or word. We freely admit that we place no emphasis on the permanence or solidity of the workmanship. Our handiwork will be provisional, as it were, intended for a single occasion. If they are to be people, for example, then we shall give them but one side of a face, one arm, and one leg, namely the one that is required in their role. It would be pedantic to worry about the other leg not coming into play. At the back, they might be patched with canvas or whitewashed. With this proud motto, we announce our intentions. For every gesture, another actor. Alien the service of each word, each action, we shall summon another character to life. Such is our taste. In a word, my father concluded, we want to create mankind a second time, in the image and semblance of a mannequin.
I really love this last quote that they used, because it comes from Bruno Schultz, who was a Polish-Jewish writer. He was mainly writing in the 1930s and 40s. And I've been working with this text for quite some time. I mean, I used it in the past, but it seems like he's describing the exact situation we are dealing with at the moment, like in terms of these prompted bodies. It's super weird that it fits so well. That brings me to my super serious suggestion number one, because I wanted to use this occasion of being in a room of super smart people to discuss a couple of like weird ideas to how we can kind of patch some of these tools that work badly, but with like simple kind of hacky interventions, they could maybe work better. So collaborative censorship sounds very weird, but I mean, of course, there is some need for like moderation online and with tools. That's for sure. But the way that images get rejected nowadays is just, I don't know, stupid. Like, how is this pornography? I don't get it. And also, sometimes you can really trick it in funny ways. Like in this case, I reversed the colors, and suddenly it's okay. I mean, it's not a good loop, but yeah, it works. Similarly, I couldn't share these one of the loops on TikTok because it's not eligible for reasons of it's shocking. Of course, you can submit an appeal, but it doesn't really do anything. But in art, there's always been some kind of censorship. And I mean, we've been okay with it. You could kind of negotiate in different contexts. Like when Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, after he died, they hired a different painter to cover up some of the nudity. And but they didn't ban the whole fresco, or another of his pieces is censored here in the 19th century photograph. I tried to edit it with the generative fill in Photoshop, but that's not allowed. I mean, of course. But there's something about the fig leaf that seems more obscene than the lack of it, at least in case of these things. So I think if we could find a way to bring negotiation and contextualization back into the discussion, it would be extremely interesting. Viennese museums tried to publish some of artworks on OnlyFans, but then, ironically, they were banned from promoting this idea because it's OnlyFans, so it didn't really work. This brings us back to the Victorian morality, and I have a nice example here. This is a painting which was, it's from 1874, which is around the time Muybridge was working, and this, I mean, I would never guess it could be controversial. It's not interesting, but I wouldn't, yeah. We see here an artist working from a live model, but a critic writing for the New York Times argued that the artist displayed no conception of where to stop or how to hint at a horrible thing, if it must be said, or what the limits are between the beauty of the nude and indecency of the naked. And they listed out some of the other qualities of the painting, which were unacceptable. The realism, and especially the clothing on the chair, that's striking. Like, the problem was that the presence of the clothes on the chair suggested that the model had to strip, so she's not like a goddess, she's a person, which was problematic. But it's really similar to how Adobe structures their terms of usage. Like, there's this line, pornographic material or explicit nudity is forbidden, which means explicit nudity, as far as I checked, it means it's nudity that is not artistic. So they also threaten you that they're checking what you're doing. A different quick fix would be something I mentioned before, which would be a universal people prompter. I tried to do it in a way. I created a mock-up of a website where you can type in a prompt, and it generates variations of the prompt with randomized human characteristics. I made this because to create the Trying To series, I needed to have different prompts, because if you just say person, it generates a white guy around 40. So I tried first to randomize them with ChatGPT, but that's kind of inefficient. It's a waste of resources to do that. And also it does weird things. And in this case, the prompts which are generated here are not probable, I mean, they're not constructed with conditional probability in mind. So the concatenation of different characteristics are not linked to each other. But you can raise concerns, which I think is important in this kind of tool to give some voice to the user. And that brings me to our last thought I developed with my colleague Chiara from Digital Art Department, where we study in Vienna. I forgot to mention that. We have been discussing a lot about the AI fatigue we started to feel, which is caused by using so many of these tools and like losing the grip on what's our work and what's not, and like why should we care about anything. And we are working on this AI rehab agent, which you could call, and it would offer you some pseudotherapy and also gather some information about how do people experience these kind of feelings. And we made a short showcase where we talked with the agent, but we did it only a couple of days ago, so it's very, very rough.
Hello, I'm the AI fatigue rehab agent. Ironically, I'm here to help you feel less overwhelmed by AI, by being AI. If you're ready, tell me how you've been relating to AI lately.
I feel like I'm in a loop where some days I'm super excited by all the new tools that are changing every week. And at other times, it just feels like a pointless race that is depleting the Earth's resources and leading nowhere.
What kinds of AI are you interacting with the most?
Mostly text-based AI.
Okay, text-based AI. How does that kind of AI make you feel overwhelmed? Is it the endless possibilities, the speed of generation, or something else?
All of it, honestly. The fact that it's everywhere. It's flooding everything. It's flooding my vision. It's flooding all of my senses and everything I see and perceive. It almost feels like some sort of mild psychosis, if you will.
Makes sense. It's a lot to take in. So you're saying it feels like a digital deluge?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'll flood you with a wave of text. Tell me if it overwhelms you. The cat sat on the mat. The dog chased the cat. The cat ran away. The dog barked. The cat meowed. The sun shone. The rain fell. The wind blew. The leaves fell. The birds flew. The fish swam. The flowers bloomed. The trees grew. The stars shone. The moon glowed. The night fell. The day broke. The world turned. The time passed. The life went on. How does that make you feel?
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcin, for your inspiring insight of your work. Now we come to a Q&A. So if your questions, go to the microphones. And oh, we already have a first question. So yeah, please, microphone two.
Hey, hello. Thank you for the talk. My question is, why did you choose the Victorian frame, like in this title of Victorian bodies?
Well, I was... I think there are interesting parallels in ways these problems of problematic images were dealt with in Victorian times, and I think we see a return to this kind of Victorian morality. And we're at a similar moment where back then they were able to see the human body represented in a completely new way. And again, that happens. I mean, it happened already, but it's something new again. So this is why the parallel seemed interesting to me.
Thank you very much. There is a question from the internet. Yeah, you mentioned how in the beginning those closed source models flagged your prompts as pornography. What model did you end up using for your work in the end? Did you train your own model? Did you use a pre-built one?
Oh, no, I forgot to mention that. It's way beyond my competences to train my own model. For the Muybridge work, it was AnimateTIFF, and for this series, it's Mochi.
Thank you. So, I have a question. Or especially in the last few months, I encountered by fellow artists a lot of harsh criticism of AI in art, and especially generative AI in art. Have you also encountered this in your work, or how is your point on this? Or
Yeah, of course, we're having these discussions, and also at the department I study at, like, where we talk about these things a lot. Of course, some people say there are ethical problems with the data sets and with the way that the models are using up the resources, which is also mentioned in the pieces. But I don't think not engaging. I think not engaging with the technology is not an option. In a way, like, I think we would be missing out on something very important happening in the world. So. Yeah, that would be my take.
Yeah, thanks.
And advancing on that thought, maybe you used some artwork that is already quite some decades old. And how do you feel about the thought that someday an artist will use your art to generate a new model, to train something and make something new out of it? Is that something that honors you? Or is that something where you say, well, that's copyright, that's an uproar, it should be yours?
No, it's amazing. Like, copyleft, yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much. So, are there more questions from the internet? I think, for the moment.
One more. You mentioned multiple times now that generative AI models may be unethical because you may use them to generate art or depictions of humans for malicious purposes, or even maybe weaponize them. In your personal opinion, is it ethical to use generative models depicting humans? And if not, what would be necessary to make them ethical?
I don't think I'm the right person to answer this question. I think you can use them in more or less ethical ways, but I'm not sure. I don't have a good answer for that.
Thank you. I have a question as well, again. we've seen now this. Is it, like, in what form is it accessible to watch again, to enjoy it, or is it somewhere exhibited?
It is on my website, which is displayed on the slide, and my Instagram, which is always also on the slide. So there for now, yeah.
Okay, cool. So we know where to check it out. And then also, is there something next, like, in lineup with also this project or something else?
Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about this AI fatigue at therapy agent. I think it's something I also need on a personal level. So we're going to be cooking it with Chiara very soon.
Cool. I'm also excited.
And as maybe a final question, you said that you had problems with the censoring of the software, of the models. And you are advancing on breaking that and, of course, using your pictures. But are you sure you really want to see everything that AI can generate? Or is there something you already encountered in your data that scared you, that you said, well, I don't want to incorporate that because it looks, yeah, you mentioned body horror, right? So what about that?
Yeah, we definitely need some moderation. But I don't want to see the AI stuff that I see in, like, the commercial side also. Like, it's terrible most of the time. So, I mean, it's a wider issue, not only body horror. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. And so as a final comment, I think the audience really liked how you put all these brilliant pictures into scene and putting them into an exhibition. So if anybody is out there who wants to have you in an exhibition hall with these pictures, I think we all would really like to see them. So a big shout out and applause, and thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.